Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your categorical mismanagement of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Welcome, all blinks. It's the K-pop girl group episode of Popcast, which I've been wanting to do for a while. Also, a lot of y'all have been clamoring, itching, perhaps, for a K-pop episode. And finally, here we are. You were listening to Blackpink. That's Pink Venom from the album that they put out a few months ago, which, oh God, here we're just going to get into it, which was lightly mid. But there's a lot happening in the world of K-pop girl groups. There's a lot of exciting new acts. Younger acts expanding the musical vocabulary of the space. And we're going to talk about all of that today. Tamar Herman is here. Tamar, first of all, welcome. First time on podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Tamar has been writing about K-pop for a long time, writes for Billboard, writes for Forbes, wrote a book about BTS, a whole ass book, has a newsletter, Notes on K-pop, has been paying attention for a very long time. And we're going to get as into the weeds as we can here about what's been happening these last 2 or 3 years. And Blackpink seems like a really good way to start, because Blackpink arrived so loudly and with such force. We're talking, what, 4 years ago, 4 to 5 years ago at this point. But I remember thinking that
2016, I think.
16. Geez, we're aging fast. Okay. 7 years ago. But I remember thinking the impact that Blackpink was making with a relatively scant amount of music was really impressive and forceful. And you even mention in your show review of this most recent tour from the New Jersey show, you sort of underscore like, hey, Blackpink ultimately doesn't have that many songs, like in the big picture. But why do you think at that specific moment when this group arrived, it was able to make such a big impact so quickly?
Well, the big thing to know about Blackpink's beginning is that they're from a company called YG Entertainment. YG Entertainment is considered a really reliable music company in South Korea. They produced previous groups like Big Bang and 21. And just people had their eye on Blackpink because 21 was the girl group. People, if you're familiar with CL, and
shout out CL.
People were expecting this. 21 came out in 2009, and YG hadn't produced another girl group since then. YG is kind of, everyone knows, or if you're listening to this, I assume maybe you have some inkling that K-pop is considered a very fast-paced industry, and really it's typical for artists to release like tons of music a year. YG doesn't have that method.
That model,
they don't do that. Yeah, they don't do that. For their women, it's actually... it's a source of criticism. Their women get even less music than the guys, but the guys also tend to have a slow rollout. It's a little bit more, nobody's doing like Rihanna, but it's somewhere between like an album every year or every 2 years rather than an album every 3 to 5 months. It's typical of some other artists in the industry or some other companies in the industry. So Blackpink, you know, they were the new girls on the scene. They were highly anticipated as the new YG girl group, and they just took off. And they took off because A, the hype, and B, they're just phenomenal performers. The talent is there. They are a girl group, but they were a little bit older when they started. I think they were all, if not in their early 20s, they were all in their late teens. So they were kind of a more mature and fiercer girl group than a lot of the other counterparts that were going on right then. And they just took off.
I also feel like they had a pretty sophisticated relationship to American hip-hop and R&B. This is something, and Teddy at YG being the kind of long-running behind-the-scenes force, obviously like a very adept fan, student of American music, and hearing those first couple Blackpink records felt extraordinarily dialed in with what was happening in the rest of the world. They didn't feel like isolated, walled-off records. They felt very much in dialogue with what's happening. 21 in its day was also certainly Big Bang in its day. This was something that often came up. G-Dragon solo records and so on and so forth.
Teddy and YG as a whole has always been known in Korea as the more, I'd say, American sounding company, which usually really means more hip hop influenced company as a whole. And that's mostly because of Teddy. If you don't know what we're talking about, Teddy is YG's big producer, and Blackpink have never done a song that's not by Teddy.
I think Teddy can make me a hit, probably.
I'd love to see that.
I'd love to see it, too. So in 2012, I reviewed 21 at the Prudential Center. And this is so long ago that we didn't even put K-pop in the head. We had Korean pop in the head, not K-pop. That's how long ago this was. But anyway, yes, 21. We were out here heavy in 2012. We were covering it. We were on the scene. That's what we're doing. Now, Blackpink got very, very big with those first few singles, right? Number one, and that first album. But then COVID happens and things kind of dissipate and go away. There is now the second album, which to my ears was maybe less exciting than the first album. One of the things that you said in your live review is you felt that some of those songs translated better live.
Yeah, for sure. I did a year-end roundup for my Notes on K-pop newsletter. And I did say, you know, I think if you're like a diehard Blink, this was probably the album you were waiting for. But if you were waiting for like some big extravagant shift musically after a few years delay, then this wasn't that album. Like, this is Blackpink. You don't like Blackpink because you want them to become something other than Blackpink. That was the feeling I had, which was this is so Blackpink that personally I would love to see them do something more. So I'm like a little bit sad, but at the same time, it is a good Blackpink album and it was really great. It was like one of the best concerts. I haven't been to that many concerts since the pandemic, so I guess I can't really say that. But it was a really great concert. I've seen them in Newark when they were here before COVID, and you could really see the energy was better. The songs really fit them and really suits them. So even though I do have that criticism, which is like, I would love to see Blackpink or just like anyone at YG like do something that's not like
a little bit different.
Yeah, like Teddy is really good and Blackpink is really good, but let's see something a teeny bit new maybe. YG is infamous for their female acts really not getting a lot of songs and not getting a lot of opportunities to kind of develop their sounds beyond like the hits. If you look at 21's discography, it's mostly the hits also. And Blackpink has way more B-sides, which is actually really nice. But solo-wise, they each have only one and there's a big gap in between. So there is that feeling like if we're having this whole gap, shouldn't we be developing a little bit more? But also they're really good at what they do, so I'm not going to criticize them.
One of the things that I struggled with Blackpink, especially on touring on the first album, was the gusto of the songs was not always reflected in the gusto of the performance. And I couldn't help but maybe read that as a little bit of a meta commentary on potential fatigue of this model, this business model, this aesthetic and sonic model. To me, I felt like here is a group of evidently deeply talented individuals being pressed into service to do a thing that maybe is not the best thing for these people to be doing. And again, that's like a lot to read into like one show, but I do occasionally feel that way when I see artists in any medium. You know, not everybody is doing the exact thing that maybe they're best at or most excited at, but having seen generations of K-pop concerts coming through New York, there was something like almost like Rihanna-ish about the Blackpink show, which is to say, not quite as present and engaged as you might expect from the music.
Did you feel that this time?
I didn't go this time, unfortunately. Oh, okay,
not the feeling this time for me, at least in Newark. And I didn't necessarily feel that last time, but I understand the Rihanna-ness. That is Blackpink's whole MO in comparison, kind of in a way different than a lot of other K-pop girl groups, especially, is they don't necessarily put themselves out there like K-pop stars. They put themselves out there kind of more like influencers or fashion icons who happen to also create, you know, music and tour. So that's kind of how I tend to think of them. And I actually just spoke to Le Monde about this because they are just so associated with Paris fashion houses. Blackpink, if you look at them broadly, they are as much influencers as they are pop stars. And I think that was really apparent during their most recent show because every scene, every set was essentially there to hone on how talented they are, how beautiful they are, how fashionable they are. Every time I see a different video on social media or from an article showing or picture showing a new performance of Blackpink on tour, they're wearing different outfits. Everything is really stylish. They are the queen bees of the pop girls nowadays on a global scale. Like you wouldn't have a fashion show without them being there. That's kind of the feeling. But they're also putting out these songs that get your energy up. Everything is just very intense. they're not necessarily engaging the way that we think of K-pop stars. K-pop stars, you know, they're all day long. People are posting content of them on social media apps, talking with fans. And that happens with Blackpink, but everything is a little bit removed. Like other K-pop stars do, you know, a lot of like reality TV shows, variety shows. Blackpink doesn't do that as much. Blackpink is on Instagram. Blackpink is both the, like I said, the fashion icons and the pop stars. That's who you get as Blackpink. And I think that really works for them.
I do wonder, this change that you talk about them being kind of as much influencers or fashion icons who happen to be performers as well, on some level, is that an option that's available to this group that was not available to 21 simply because of how vast the spread of K-pop was in the mid-2010s?
The thing that really changed between Blackpink and 21, aside from like an entire generation of pop stars, was nowadays K-pop stars are now known as fashion icons, just like Blackpink, and more are likely to wear luxury brands on stage. So like the most iconic shot, I feel like, of 21, well, there's a lot of them, but like one is of, I think it was CL wearing like a unicorn across her chest. Like it's just a unicorn that's like riding off of her. And like when they debuted, Dara had literally like her hair was sticking up. It looked so alien, like you're coming out of a sci-fi movie. Her hair is just like sticking straight up on top of her head. And there was a very sci-fi concept. Whereas when Blackpink debuted, it was high fashion. They've almost always been associated with luxury brands. And now that is the norm for K-pop. So it's kind of depicted this entire shift of the industry is more towards fashion rather than that avant-garde experimentalism that the previous generation of K-pop kind of was. If you're a popular K-pop star, you have a luxury brand associated with you. Like right now, like in the past few weeks, like a bunch of BTS members, a few other K-pop stars were just announced as fashion ambassadors. This is just something that has now become the norm, whereas, you know, it used to be more stage costumey. You never used to see luxury names anywhere on K-pop stars, and now they're everywhere on K-pop stars.
Do you feel like Blackpink is long for this world?
Of course, I want them to be.
That's not about want. I just like there's something about that reluctance makes me think like, I don't know. And again, this is not a shot. Like I stan Jisoo, I stan Jennie. It's nothing about the individuals, but I do wonder if 5 years from now, we'll be listening to Blackpink songs or not, like new Blackpink songs. It feels like no, maybe it's because of the slow roll of music, or maybe it's because it always seems like there's one eye on some other prize with this group.
I want to like kind of question your interpretation of their reluctance, because I don't really ever feel reluctant from them as much as like the cool girl Parisian chick. I'm aloof. Like I'm not going to be like, I've never felt reluctance from them. I felt, you know, there's been clear times where, you know, in their Netflix documentary, even Rosé is like, I want to, you know, create different sort of songs with my guitar.
They seem sad. I'm sorry. They seem sad in the documentary. Like, let's just say I'm going to get assassinated for talking about this. They seem sad.
That documentary was an interesting documentary because I didn't really think it showed a whole lot about what Blackpink are or who they can be, but it was an interesting tie-in to Coachella. That's really all I can say about that documentary.
Oh, that's interesting. I felt differently. I felt like it allowed a kind of flexible human lens on something that you don't always get with the albums and with the shows.
I've watched their other contents, and like when they're just like joking around, it's just a totally different feel. I like watching entertainment, like variety shows of K-pop stars. So I think that your question about Blackpink kind of continuing. The truth is that K-pop, especially girl groups, have a time limit, and that is their contract renewal period ends at 7 years. And typically, K-pop female acts do not renew. Typically, girl groups, the companies don't see them worth the investment. That is really changing. And Blackpink is such a prominent girl group IP, if I could say, that there's so much interest in them still that it would be really dumb, I think, for YG to get rid of them. But traditionally, first of all, YG is, for all the good that they do, they have been really not great at maintaining their female artists' longevity, to the degree that anytime a female artist has joined the company, they typically leave them with very few songs afterwards. So the company is not known particularly as the most female-friendly place. So there is a new girl group coming called Baby Monster, which is very interesting. Their youngest, I don't know if she's youngest, but they just revealed a 13-year-old member. And so far, the other members have all been in their mid-teens.
That's very young.
Yeah, it's kind of the trend now. NewJeans is also pretty young, but not that young.
Yeah, NewJeans is young, yeah.
It creates longevity for careers, so that's the thinking.
Basically, if there is a seven-year rule, is the thinking better from 13 to 20 than 19 to 26, basically?
I don't know, because it's not like that really mattered for Blackpink. I think it's just they had Blackpink, so just generally, if you're a company producing another group while you have an active group, you have to come up with a different thing. So this one is Baby Monster, and I think the baby is like the youth, like the young thing. There's been a lot of K-pop groups in recent years that kind of try to hone in on that youthfulness of their audience, because K-pop's audience is broad, but there is always a teenage aspect in kind of the feeling of producing pop groups, like boy bands and girl groups. Teeny bopper, that's the stereotype. So there is that push for that. But I think that Blackpink has like the weird, and I just think everyone from this generation is going to have that weird, we had a weird gap of 2 years in the middle of our career. So you mentioned earlier that you feel like Blackpink only came out a few years ago, but it was already almost 7 years. And so that feeling of the pandemic kind of bisecting all the careers, all the tours. It is, I wouldn't say bizarre, but it's wild to consider that Blackpink is so late in their career and they're Blackpink, right? But this is only their second tour worldwide. And they're having a huge tour. They're having like a historic record breaking tour. But are they just going to, you know, have a big tour and then just, oh, hey, we're not renewing? I mean, that's up to them. We mentioned the documentary before and you said you thought they felt sad, but what is a narrative with K-pop? You never know with these documentaries. And
oh, of course. It's sanctioned product.
If Rosé got on Instagram Live and was like, I'm quitting YG right now. I'm not saying that Rosé is saying that.
Yo, free Rosé. Sorry. Free Rosé.
She likes her guitar.
Free Jisoo. Free Jisoo.
I think that the thing with the contract renewals, the thing that we do see is when a group has the contract renewal period afterwards, they get a lot more creative freedom because those original contracts they usually signed when they had no standing whatsoever. So when a K-pop group renews, which happens now more increasingly, like you see a whole slew of new productions, like everybody in a lot of boy bands after they renew at 7 year mark, that's when solo albums start coming out. So that you know that the contract renewal included not only will they get X amount of albums in the next few years, but each member who fights for it for themselves will get an album or get a solo or something. So I think that the pandemic kind of put this drain on Blackpink's career in like that regard, where they were, I wouldn't say they were sitting down, they were working on the album ostensibly, but because they couldn't tour, it does feel like they held on to this album until they could tour again. And fans, they've literally, I was one time in Korea and they were just literally a protest truck outside of YG Entertainment. Fans were like, give us the girl solos. Like they're no, like seriously, they hire ads to be like, you promised us, like the company has had a release statement. No, we promise you that Rosé and Jennie and Lisa and Jisoo will all get solos this year. And then they haven't delivered. So fans are annoyed.
Wow. These are like the Fiona protests, yes. The Fiona Apple protests.
So like they announced that Jisoo's getting a solo this year. So that's exciting. Hopefully they deliver it. But I do feel like I just feel like unless the girls want to go their own way, I think that nowadays we see a lot of K-pop groups realizing that as much as they each have their own values, the group is kind of the identity is really important to maintain. So now you see a lot of groups renewing or going off on their own with the country's kind of blessing, like a group like GOT7 left JYP Entertainment, I think it was early last year. They had I'm sure there was a lot of contracts about rights and everything, but it was with the company's good wishes, like, okay, we raised you and now, like, you know, go do your own thing. Like, we're kind of, you know, go our separate ways. That company tends to do that a lot with artists after they think they peaked, and then they usually do great things afterwards. So it's just the development of K-pop stars nowadays isn't as straightforward as it used to be, where it used to be the companies were more dominant from start to finish of a career. Now the careers are continuing. Either the artists are gaining more rights and getting their control of the company. So you'll see a lot of artists at SM Entertainment. Usually if the artists renew, they get shares in the company, and they tend to, if they stay even longer, they tend to get like actual titles at the company and take on roles. there's so many stereotypes about what K-pop is and what it isn't, about like youth training and all that. And I always think of it like, if you consider it like they're interns and associates, and then later on in their career, they can become managers or go up to being CEOs, because a lot of K-pop stars do launch their own companies eventually. If you think of it as that business model, kind of, I look at a K-pop group as like a team within a company. And that's the easiest way, I think, to describe, you know, everyone's like, they're a cog in the machine. If you think about them being a team within a company, okay, that really makes it a little bit more, I think, palatable for critics.
But paradoxically, the interns are the ones that have the most fans and the managers don't have fans.
So sometimes, SHINee has one that the members try to set up and get him married off. So never say never.
Let's go to a break real fast. Let's go with a Blackpink solo song. Let's listen to Lisa, This Is Money. My money moves. Money I choose. Sleep my shoes. Walking on you. My money rules. My money moves. Money I choose. Watch out my walls. Yes, dollars. We're dropping on you.
The community around my favorite New York Times games is just incredible.
The whole world is kind of playing together.
Wordle has united my family and we live across four different time zones.
My favorite way to do the crossword is with you.
I am carrying the team a little bit.
I play Spelling Bee every single day. I'm on a text thread with my mother and my cousins to see who can hit genius first and can anybody get Queen Bee.
Sometimes I have to use the community hints, but you don't feel like you're cheating when you use them. You still feel like you worked for it.
Doing a New York Times crossword puzzle with someone else is one of my favorite activities.
Sometimes I'll put it on the TV and we'll play it together as a family.
Daddy, can we play Spelling Bee?
Join us and play all New York Times games
at nytimes.com/games.
We're back. We're talking K-pop girl groups. Tamar Herman is here. Let's maybe expand a little bit. In your estimation, to what degree did Blackpink have a broader impact in how K-pop girl groups were evolving, either sonically or just structurally?
So a few years ago, I wrote an article for Forbes. I don't remember what it was titled, but it was kind of punny because there's a song called The Boys by Girls' Generation. And the first shout out from it is Girls Bring the Boys Out. And at the time when I wrote this article, I want to say it was in 2017, boy bands were touring in the US and no girl groups were to be seen. For girl groups, really, you barely ever had any girl groups touring. And then, of course, pandemic happened. But pandemic aside, you just had the first stadium tour ever in the US by a K-pop girl group. That was Twice. And Blackpink is having this huge major tour. And a lot of other K-pop girl groups are touring, even smaller ones. But for years, even the biggest names wouldn't tour.
Because of a perception of lack of audience enthusiasm, or just because the labels were not offering the support for touring?
All of the above. And there's always been this perception that K-pop boys make money because they bring in the female fans who will spend. But the most successful K-pop girl groups historically have always been the ones that have the biggest female audiences. So 21 and Girls' Generation had those audiences. I'm not saying only female, but heavily female-dominated audiences. Like, if you think of what makes a boy band successful in the West, you always think of females. In K-pop, that is true, but they never necessarily targeted those audiences.
Should we listen to a 21 song? I feel like we should remind people of what that energy was like.
Well, they did say, I am the best.
Who are we to call that into doubt? All right, this is 21. I am the best. Oh my God.
There was this whole generation that 21 was part of different types of girl groups. I actually just wrote a whole article about Girls' Generation making a return recently.
First K-pop app signed to an American major label,
yes.
Girls' Generation.
They had the boys. I remember seeing the ads in Times Square and being like, what is happening?
Perhaps a touch too early for the maturity of the American marketplace at that time.
Yeah, they still got on Letterman. It was very random performance at the time.
Yeah, I remember feeling that.
I remember watching it in my college dorm and being like, this is just bizarre. But it was great. And I always loved Girls' Generation. I've written about that quite recently because they just released their 15th anniversary album. But the girl groups of that era, of like Girls' Generation era and 21's era, they were very distinct, either they were kind of flirty, sexy, girlish kind of targeting male audiences, or they were groups like Girls Generation and 21, which were, they were two paradigms, which was girls next door who you could be friends with and the girls you want to be. So that was Girls Generation and 21. Obviously, they didn't have those marketing stamped on their head, but that was always the feel. And those were the girl groups that really took off, generally with longevity, with like fan bases built after them. So it's kind of like how boy bands tend to get fan bases. They were proving that the longevity of female groups could also have these big fan bases of female fans. And companies didn't really catch this. When I wrote that article for Forbes a few years ago, I remember speaking to people and they were just like, yeah, people just don't think that the audiences are going to come. They don't think that these girls are going to show up for girls. Like the people who spend money on K-pop internationally tend to be female heavy audiences. We don't think they're going to come. Nowadays, I don't think the audiences are only female. I think at Blackpink, definitely the audience was pretty close to 50-50 visible gender split. But in general, there was this big kind of schism, is a little bit intense, but in between that generation of K-pop girl groups and this generation of K-pop girl groups, people realized, hey, girls like girl groups. So if 21 was the Spice Girls of that generation, you know, they were edgy and they were kind of cool. Now every girl group kind of has a little bit of that in them. So now you have this thing called girl crush, which is like essentially these girls are so cool. That's it.
Before we kind of get into the sort of newest generation, you mentioned Twice earlier. Can you talk a little bit about how Twice functions in this particular way? Twice struck me as, even though it's roughly Blackpink generation, not necessarily trying to solve the same problems that Blackpink was trying to solve.
We think of it as Blackpink's generation in America, but actually in Asia, it's definitely Twice's generation. And they've been actually really good at English language promotions in recent years. Their song The Feels is really great. And their new song Moonlight Sunrise just came out this week. And they have, I think, an English album coming out. And they've toured really well in the US. They had a stadium show in LA last year. And they have a more, I'd say, a more typical K-pop girl group paradigm originally, which is, you know, a little bit more girlish, flirty, targeting what people think of as like girl group, quote unquote.
Yeah, what is a good early Twice song? I was thinking maybe Signal or that something from that era.
Oh, I love TT.
All right, let's listen to TT by Twice.
So you had all of these songs that were very, I want to say a little gimmicky, and then Twice developed, like they matured over the years. So they started songs that were a little bit more either aggressive or a little bit more emotional. One of the members took a break for her mental health and they came back with a song that was about pretty much mental health. They have developed over the years to being a little bit flirty and a little bit sexy, like seeing them perform in LA, like half of the show was literally the crowd, like cheering on the members, getting into their feels and just having fun. You know, this was almost the paradigm of a, I want to say like male gazy girl group from day one, but they've really developed over the years. So you have these two total different girl groups, Blackpink, which was always kind of a small girl group with four members, and then a whole kind of fashion queen's identity from day one and cooler than you. And then you had Twice. There were nine members. They were girlish. Blackpink songs have always been a little bit more bombastic, whereas Twice's songs were always a little bit cutesier.
Blackpink songs feel like five songs having a collision at an intersection.
That's the best of K-pop songs.
Yeah, it's like these are my, you know, my favorite Big Bang songs like that. It is very striking to listen to Twice songs and other girl groups that are up against Blackpink songs because Blackpink songs feel like they've arrived to like stomp on those other songs. Like they almost feel like pointedly in retaliation for those songs sometimes.
Sometimes. I think the thing that is really different is the scale. And if we think of TikTok videos, the hook has always been really important. K-pop was already doing that ages ago because when K-pop kind of took off on YouTube in the late 2000s, it was all dance videos. So you always had that like viral moment in the music and in the song. So Twice, literally their songs are built for that. Or their early songs were like, if you just hear the titles, TT, Knock Knock, Yes or Yes, like the songs had kind of a rhythmic pattern to them that was meant to get caught in your head. Like I am humming the songs in my head as I speak. Blackpink songs, they have that too, you know. But if Twice is supposed to get stuck in your head, Blackpink is supposed to get like stuck like in your kind of energy. I'm not explaining this well. Like they are supposed to pump you up and Twice are supposed to keep you company. But I think that what Twice and Blackpink represent, kind of like how Girls' Generation and 21 represented different paradigms of what female groups can be in this K-pop world, they both developed differently. Twice really, if you look at them now, like they are a really different group than where they started out, but it feels like a maturation of them, which is, I think, a really great thing to have witnessed. But now you see girl groups that are showing up and the new generation is finding a middle ground. So if the girl groups of the previous generations were kind of really, I am this one thing, I am Blackpink, I'm Twice, these girl groups, of course, they have their own identities, but they're a little bit more in between, like, I'm the cool girl, but also I can be your friend. And I'm gonna, you know, sing about, I mean, NewJeans, literally, they're, one of their music videos for Ditto was dealing with mental health. But then they also have a song called Cookie, which
caused some issues, apparently.
It did cause some issues. If you're listening and you're unaware, there was a lot of backlash from overseas fans about what the euphemism for cookie, whereas in Korea, a lot of people were like, no, this is a really like innocent, harmless thing. And it's like implying that they're baking their career.
That's the split. The people who were the most stressed about that were overseas fans, not Korean fans.
The official PR was that the term for making cookies and making music is pretty much, I think it was burning a CD or something, because they have a whole Y2K concept, but it was something like that. But like when I've talked to Korean friends of mine, they're like, no, I don't understand why people are upset. Like literally, like I thought it was so cute. Yeah, I would invite friends over to, you know, come and chill after school and have some cookies. So there was a total disconnect online regarding NewJeans, that song. I just think the music is really good.
Yeah, music's great. I want to come back to NewJeans and Le Sserafim. We should touch on aespa, ITZY, IVE, like the next wave of girl groups. What do you see happening in that generation? Because I feel like you're starting to see a light return to eccentricity, but each group taking on like a slightly different approach to it. But it does feel like there's more character work going on. I don't know if you want to say 2018 to 2022 generations of girl groups.
Oh, K-pop generations. That is a whole other conversation. Okay. There's like official generations. What you see right now with K-pop girl groups, the previous, when I mentioned previous, I'm thinking like Girls' Generation and 21, you had a concept per each album, and Twice started their career like this. So each album had a different feel. There was usually a sonic element that felt really familiar, but sometimes they'd go totally like a totally different direction. You're like, how is this the same girl group? But like it would work. But it felt like they always had their brand that was off camera and off stage, and then they had their stage concepts. So now they're kind of embodying it across the board. You're always seeing them in the same way. Like this girl group is living their concept. And so like ITZY and another group, Stacey, they kind of have a very girl power, forthright nature that is across their musics and across their videos and across the outfits that they wear and how they portray themselves publicly.
Let's check in with ITZY. Tiny bit of quirk in ITZY, which I like a lot. This is Racer.
You get other groups like IVE, which is like the cool girl at school. Like they're classy. They have a little bit of girlishness in that some of the members are, I think one of them just started high school. They're still young. Two of the members have already like an intense career behind them. And so they're a little bit older and chicer, and just everybody has their own brand nowadays that kind of is all encompassing. They're not going to switch a concept every single song that feels totally new and different. It's going to be a continuation and tell a story. And those stories are really important. That is the thing that is like nowadays across the board. So you have a group like aespa, which is literally, they are a AI integrated girl group, supposedly. So they supposedly have the four members that we know and love. And they also have four AI members, or the A's, I's. I think they're the eyes. They're AE. I can never remember. It's aespa, so I guess it's eh. I don't know.
Let's listen to a recent aespa song. Let's listen to Dreams Come True.
You wanna feel the vibe that I'm feeling and I'm bringing an imagine. Jackie Bali looks like tiny with cow is destiny. She can put her hand out to sit down and more your butcher good and come over.
If you ask SM Entertainment PR, they will tell you that they have the four members and they also have the four virtual members. They will act like it is eight people, but it's obviously not. That was the original PR. I don't think they do that anymore. But it was this push to create, first of all, IP off of K-pop groups is very lucrative nowadays for these companies. So creating something that you don't necessarily need the face royalties, like you don't need image rights, but also SM Entertainment has, which is what who produces aespa, they've always attempted to tell stories. Storytelling is really important for a lot of K-pop groups. BTS is famous for this, but other groups like SM had their boy band EXO, which started out with an alien concept. They came from different planets. And this is like very typical for K-pop, but this new generation really incorporates it into their songs and music videos. And it's Marvel or any fantasy series where you can pick up a book or watch a movie without knowing the whole thing, but people who know the whole thing know everything and they look to find all the little treasure details. That is where we are for K-pop, where you're seeing these big picture stories, whether it's, you know, intentional or not, because sometimes, like, seriously, sometimes like these companies are just like hoping that someone finds something, I think. But a lot of the times they are really intense. Like I just was at an AT's concert and they have this whole concept with pirates and outer space, and they literally showed up on stage with a pirate ship and it was really cool. And like they brought a ship as part of their stage structure, and there was also a moon hanging, and then the moon was in a music video the next day, or not the next day, a few weeks later. So you have these whole overarching branding of girl groups nowadays that's a little different than in the past, where obviously they're a band, they have a brand, but now the stage stories that they're telling through their music and their music videos is supposed to connect with who they are off stage and the messages they share with their fans and how they represent themselves. So there's just a lot of more, I want to say, integration between the conceptualization of K-pop girl groups nowadays versus it being short term from previous generations where it's like, you have this album with this concept. Now it's like, you'll have a concept for your whole career.
You mentioned IVE. Tamar, what's a good IVE song to get people situated with them?
It has to be Love Dive.
All right, let's get it. The last groups I want to talk about are a pair of groups, is New Jeans and Le Sserafim, both on HYBE Entertainment, HYBE, two groups with what feel like signature presentations. I personally am partial to New Jeans. I feel like their kind of engagement with contemporary music feels really fresh. Little sprinkles of contemporary R&B, a Jersey Club, etc. To me, there's something that feels so specifically modern about New Jeans. Le Sserafim, I think, is doing something different, but it feels so specifically modern and reminds me, frankly, of the way I first felt when encountering like the best Big Bang moments or the best early Blackpink songs, where I was like, oh, okay, y'all came to play, like in the big picture sense. Can you talk a tiny bit about HYBE as a label and how these two groups kind of function side by side? There's a lot of parallel action happening here.
New Jeans and Le Sserafim both debuted last year from HYBE's subsidiary labels. HYBE is best known for being the home to BTS. It was formerly Big Hit Entertainment, and now it's Big Hit Music under HYBE. But Le Sserafim is produced by Pledis Entertainment, which is also known for groups like Seventeen and formerly New East and GFriend. New Jeans is from Adore, which is a new company that is also under HYBE, but it's headed by Min Hee Jin, who was formerly at SM Entertainment and involved in the creative decisions there for many years. So she was very impactful in the company. And so this is pretty much the first group that she's producing, and she's producing it under the HYBE auspices. So the thing that we're seeing nowadays is a lot of K-pop companies are doing this thing where they're producing two groups at the same time or have different teams under their companies producing different groups and focusing their whole attention on that group. But it keeps like the ball rolling, if you have rival groups, if you think about NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, they were produced by the same people, but they were rivals. And so you got to get, for the company's standpoint, you got to keep the profits among yourself rather than creating a rival between you and another company. So I wouldn't say they're rivals, but you have a lot of companies creating different types of groups that attract different audiences that kind of keeps the audience base honed in on your company rather than going off. So you have in SM Entertainment, they have a whole group called NCT, and there's different groups underneath NCT Dream, NCT 127, Wavy. They all target different audiences. And so at HYBE, they are very, the Minhyejin just went viral for saying something about Adore being very separate from the rest of HYBE. So it's unclear nowadays how much like interaction there is between the different subsidiaries. But Le Sserafim and NewJeans, they're not targeting the same audience necessarily.
Talk about what Le Sserafim is doing, especially in contrast to NewJeans. Because to me, of the two, NewJeans feels like the more, the truly the most modern, most progressive, most engaged.
So you said that earlier, but it's really funny because from definitely everyone I know who's a music writer, not everyone, I have to preface that, not everyone, because I'm in a group chat with a bunch of Latin music writers, including my friend Alexis, who's the head of Remezcla Music. They love Le Sserafim because Le Sserafim's song Antifragile leans into reggaeton. So you have very discordant, and while NewJeans is mostly known nowadays for being into Jersey Club. And so you have two really different sonic musical histories coming from these two very different girl groups that have two very different backgrounds. NewJeans is totally brand new. People didn't really know anything about the members, whereas Le Sserafim has members who've already been active for literally years in the industry. One girl came from AKB48, being the most popular girl in Japan pop music scene, to debuting in a group called Eyes One with another member of Le Sserafim. So they kind of are known entities, and they're more, I want to say aggressive, but their whole concept is they're called Le Sserafim, right? And it stands for, it's an anagram for I Am Fearless. Whereas NewJeans is leaning into nostalgia and evocative of youthful, like the nice days of youth and like your childhood. And that's not all they're doing. They're questioning entertainers and what K-pop stars can be. They have a music video that literally ends with someone like leaving, you know, a nasty comment and the kind of them being like, no. And you have like this whole kind of meta commentary on K-pop idols and just celebrity culture nowadays. And so you have these two really different entities coming from the same overarching label, but it's like saying two products that Google launched the same year are rivals, but they're doing different things.
That meta commentary that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Before we go out, I kind of wonder, like, to what degree do you find meta commentary refracted back into K-pop, whether in terms of the music itself or visual presentation or even just like discursively?
There's so much discourse that you can't really talk about the discourse as being the same thing because everyone has a different interpretation. But I think that K-pop at times really, you know, recognizes, the artists recognize, you know, what they're doing and what the limitations of the industry are. And you'll often get, either later on in the careers or in documentary series, they'll talk pretty frankly. And so I think there's a lot going on just in general around NewJeans, just because the team that produces them, like Minhyejin, is known for her kind of creative elements. So like, it's everything was a whole package. And she keeps on saying on the record, like, this has been something that we've been working on for like years to tell like their story and show the design. Like, their first album is literally in a purse. Like, you can buy a little purse as the album packaging. It's very cute. I mean, every K-pop group has a lot going in them. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, NewJeans is the only group that ever has a lot going into them. But I think that NewJeans is fresh. We don't really know. Minhyejin has been pretty quiet for many years. This is the first time she's getting to do her own thing. The members, we don't really know them. They're like, it's so different than like Le Sserafim, where we do know some of the members. Like, they, several of the members had, you know, their careers in Eyes One, or Sakura had in AKB before that. So they're a known entity, whereas NewJeans is brand new. So I think it's the storytelling that they're doing, the meta narrative that they're showing or hinting to at times, or definitely showing at other times. I think it's an interesting exercise to see how the audiences react to it. You never know. 99.9% of the time, these K-pop narratives are not trying to tell you anything that is 100%. So I don't think if anyone asks like Minhee-jin, like, hey, what did you mean by that? We'll never probably get a straight answer. But I've had a lot of conversations about the New Jeans music videos, the recent two, with friends, and people have widely different reactions. And then, like, you know, you get really intense about what you think about it. So I think that's more engaging and it gets the ball rolling. So I think it's really cool. Obviously, it's meta, but I just think it's almost daring. We know what people think about K-pop and how fans talk about it. So let's like put it in your face.
I feel like we covered a tremendous amount of turf. I appreciate you walking this road with me and offering alternate viewpoints. Sometimes I feel very alone in my K-pop consumption, just sitting here absorbing things and having feelings and having thoughts. And it's nice to gut check them out in the real world. That is our show. Thank you to Tamar. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email me at podcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Discord. Get in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/podcast/discord/podcast/Facebook. Get the t-shirts. We're down fewer than 100 t-shirts left. Get them while they're hot. It's thepodcast.myshopify.com. Subscribe anywhere you get your audio content, Apple, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer, of course, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. You know what? Let's listen to New Jeans' Cookie, and then y'all decide what this song is about. We'll leave it in your hands.
내가 만든 쿠키 너를 위해 두었지 But you know that it ain't for free yeah. 내가 만든 쿠키